Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and yes, this is your warrior, Cindy Gross, and welcome to Cindy's Corners Radio Show, bringing you timely topics in an informative and entertaining way from all corners of the world. In tonight's Cindy's opening statement, I want to discuss one word, and you're kind of thinking, what is that word? That word is party. We started this show to express ideas and share facts about a party. Actually, any party that shares constitutional and conservative values. You know, I remember so well election night 2014, and I bet many of you do too, when Brett Baer and Megyn Kelly were sitting and sharing the results with us, and they were starting to make several jokes as they were counting down to Iowa 2016. It seemed like worlds away. I remember shortly afterwards sitting at a quote-unquote power lunch with some leadership from both the Republican and conservative parties. And we were joking around and throwing around names of who would be the candidates from each of the parties. I remember so well everybody's clearly stating that Scott Walker, Susana Martinez, and Rob Portman were the leaders to head the Republican Party as we head into Election Day. While on the other side, everybody was pretty sure that Hillary was going to be the choice. But then again, nobody expected the Bernie Sanders surge and the movements of Black Lives Matter and, yes, the rise of the biggest Celebrity Apprentice. We can all agree, we really need to party. We really need to celebrate the end of too many candidates, too many scandals, too much money being wasted on campaigns, on papers being delivered to your house, on unnecessary means of trying to get facts, of course, which sometimes don't even sound true and are proved otherwise. And we understand, pay for with our taxes and feel that whatever the outcomes are in these elections, and I mean just not the presidential elections, I also mean on the state and local level, that on all of these levels, we need to celebrate the end of this piece of the puzzle from our part of the world, as the world is looking on at us and questioning what is going on the same way we are. I, as your host and friend, hope to have a party with you on several Wednesday nights and then some. I hope to enlighten your celebrations by sharing with you some great ideas and some great people. First, as I mentioned last week, Cindy's Corners radio show will be bringing you all kinds of entertaining tips, ideas for family fun, holiday hideaways, and some special alone time or time you need to preserve yourself and celebrate a new year, holidays, and traditions. One way I will be doing this, and I am quite excited about it, is that I am going to be bringing you straight from the front row of Palm Springs Fashion Week in mid-November, the backstage talk, what's going on, discussions with fashion designers, makeup artists, and everything to put yourself together to party or to have casual parties in your home and relax. I have today confirmed that I am going to have a radio show event. And it's a very special event because it is close to my heart. It's going to be a book club featuring some of today's best-selling, best-known authors. I have already confirmed that Jamie Brenner, Rochelle Berger-Weinstein, and Allison Richman are among those who will be participating. And because so many of you belong to book clubs or want to belong to a book club or just want to have a girls' night and sit with us and discuss a book, I am opening up this invitation to the first 100 people who RSVP to partake in this conversation on December 7th. So if you are interested, if you are part of a book club that wants to join us, to share your cafes, your lattes, your glasses of wine, your sushi, and your time alone and with good, then join us. You can find me on Facebook and private message me how you want to join us, and we will make the arrangement. I am also so excited about that night because I am an author. And because I am an author, it led me to you guys. And because I am an author, I can share and express my feelings, my opinions, my thoughts, and most importantly, share them and listen to you as you compare and contrast what you think. And you never know what goes on at a Cindy's Corners event party. So remember the date, December 7th, and you're going to follow me to get more information as the details become more available. On a very serious note, I have to discuss something that I am involved with that's going to take place on Thursday, November 10th. Yes, Cindy's Corner will be partying, but we will not forget what we are here to do, issues, and share facts and ideas so that people are learned and aware of what they are actually discussing. Most of you, if not all of you, have heard about the recent UN movement and the idea of changing the historical rights of Jerusalem and taking away the rights from Jews to the Western Wall and the Temple Mount. I won't stand still, and neither should you. I won't remain silent, and neither should you either. I am proud to be part of a committee that is putting together a huge rally on Thursday, November 10th at 12:30 in front of the Israeli consulate in support of the Jewish connection to Jerusalem, the Western Wall, Al Kotel, and the Mount, Temple Mount. It is extremely important, not just for Jews, but for Christians. It is very important for anybody who believes in a democracy, in women's rights, in history. Imagine changing your history or the facts that made you the kind of person you are today. Well, there's thousands of years of history there that they cannot just erase in one vote or two votes or discussions. So please join me. And you are saying to me, I'm not in New York, I can't join you. Well, yes, you can. There are so many ways. One way is to contact me directly, and I will tell you how I can get you a petition to sign that over 100,000 people already have. I will contact and connect you with groups that are involved in this movement that will send you timely updates to share and spread both on social media and your personal emails and in conversations in your local community organizations. And, of course, you can mobilize and make rallies in your own cities and say that we will not stand for this. We cannot stand as Americans supporting the actions of the United Nations. Most of the money that is supporting the United Nations comes from our tax dollars. And the United Nations does not support, in many areas, the best interests of ours as Americans, Jews, Christians, patriots, and constitutionalists. We can never have our principles compromised. So please help me get out the word about Thursday, November 10th at 12:30 at the Israeli Consulate by the United Nations in New York City. And that is one of the reasons why we all must vote next Tuesday. I am hearing from a lot of people that they are so disillusioned they cannot vote. I don't understand this because people die for the right to vote. People have risk their lives with not only themselves, but their families. Why is it so hard to vote if you are a legal citizen and have the right to? And by that matter, not just vote for the president, but make sure you know who's running in your state and local elections and see if they really have a record that you can be proud of. And with that in mind, I call tonight to be or not to be, and in regards to voting with the Republicans and the conservatives. My first guest is no stranger to leadership and politics. And by the way, he's also connected to Anthony Weiner. I am so lucky to call him my friend. I am going to now introduce you to former Congressman and current chairman of the Queens, New York Republican Club, Bob.
Good evening.
Hello, Bob.
Cindy, how are you?
How are you? And thank you so much for joining us. This is such an important night, and we have such an important message. As things keep coming out, it seems like every minute there's another breaking news alert. So thank you for joining us. And I was just telling my listeners how important this vote is, and I'm sure you can explain to them a little bit about why it's so important to vote. But first, please introduce yourself to those who are not in New York. A little bit about your background, and I told them how you're connected to Anthony Weiner, so please explain it to the national audience.
All right. I'm a senior citizen. I've spent 40 years in business, in media, in television, in advertising, and I got into politics only about 5 years ago. And I was spurred on to do this by witnessing one of Anthony Weiner's performances on television. I thought, this guy is outrageous, and he is my congressman. So I made a call to find out who was running against him so I could make a contribution. And I was informed that nobody was, but I would be welcomed to do that if I felt like it. And after some consideration, I said, all right, this is something I ought to do if I'm going to be this mouthy about the subjects. And I ran a rather spirited campaign against Weiner. We did a total of 7 debates, and it is a very heavily skewing Democratic district, about 4-1 in registration advantage, and we acquitted ourselves well. On election night, we had 41% of the vote. The New York Times did a poll and told us we would get 18% of the vote, but it was still a loss, and shortly thereafter, Mr. Weiner resigned in a very famous blowout. And I ran again for the seat, at this time against a Democrat, David Wepring, who was picked by the party to fill out the rest of that term, which would have been about a year and a half or so. So, that was a major upset in large part because I had the support of not only the party and people like Rudy Giuliani, but Mayor Ed Koch was a friend and a supporter, and he endorsed me and campaigned with me and helped with the very important Jewish vote. At the end of the day, we wound up with 53 or 4% of the vote and won. And I think this was the first time a non-Jewish Republican won the Jewish vote in any New York district. So it was a stunning defeat for the Democrats, and President Obama, who was given a message by Ed Koch that he was on the wrong course as far as the Israeli policy was concerned. And that was a major blow. But there was a point where 2 days following the election, President Obama gave the most pro-Israeli speech of his career to the UN as a direct result of this political defeat. However, it didn't seem to hold. The Democrats were stunned enough to make sure this wouldn't happen again, and they reapportioned the district in such a way that it was not going to happen again. So since then, I've been running the Republican Party for Queens, which had been in a disorganized and fractious state. But we're getting that on track, and we have a number of candidates running, and the parties seem to be united, and it's working.
Well, I can tell everybody, I just want to share, there are some wonderful people, if you're in New York and Queens, running on the Republican and conservative line. And one thing I can tell you, that everybody is so supportive and appreciative of the help that the chairman gives. But one of the things I really wanted to discuss tonight, and I think is important to you also, my listeners and my Facebook followers all know, and you know firsthand, that Donald Trump really was not my first choice. And there were times that I was really very confused about whether or not I was going to support him and actually vote for him. But I have recognized, as a New Yorker, as a Jew, as a conservative, and as the rules are the way they're set, that there's really only two parties that are really have any influence. And until there are changes made where there are powerful third and fourth parties, there really is only two choices. So I was hoping that you would explain to my audience the important message of what is going on and some of your feelings and some of your interactions with Donald Trump, because you actually represent a county that Donald Trump has a lot of connections to.
Yes, and I once met with Mr. Trump for about a half hour up in his offices when I was running. He was very helpful. He did a robocall for me, which was very well received. And we spoke about issues. The private Trump is very different than this public persona that we see, which I guess is a good thing. I was a little late coming to the Trump table, but I'm in, and I'm in rather positively. I think as we've had 8 years of this administration, we've seen a steady erosion of confidence in our institutions and in our government. It began with small drips from the EPA. Remember the Solyndra scandals, where government influence was used to benefit contributors and cronies. We soon got into the IRS scandals, where one of our most important institutions was politicized. We have this now with the Justice Department and the FBI. We've seen Obamacare turn into a fiasco, and it hasn't even fully hit yet. We watched Dodd-Frank strangle small businesses, and a well-intentioned plan that is just inept and bungling. Seeing the Iran deal, which was a fiasco. We've watched the Libyan and Syrian debacle. We've seen the alienation of Israel and an administration that tells us that they're our best friends. We are best friends, and yet will do everything they can, it seems, to demean and delegitimize their efforts and our relationships.
Well, you say that. I was going to say, you talk about relationships. First of all, today, Trump's two Jewish advisors sent out the actual platform. I actually have it on my Facebook page, so if anybody wants to friend me and find it out, it is by far the strongest support for Israel, not just for Jews, but for Christians as well. And an amazing platform of security of our values that tie into basic constitutional and historic rights. It's by far the strongest anybody has had. And, you know, you talk about that area. There's one country that's very rarely spoken about, and I always mention it to people, and they always say, Cindy, you're right, Egypt. When Obama was first elected,
yes,
we had a totally different relationship with Egypt. There was a totally different relationship with Israel and Egypt. There was a totally different relationship between its leadership and our leadership. We have basically thrown that country out and have made it a disaster. There was no ISIS in Egypt. There was nothing even related to ISIS in Egypt when Obama took office. But now there
mm-hmm.
is. And then you talk about one other group. Okay. Oh, I was going to mention,
yes,
you happen to be leader of a district that has had Democratic leadership arrested and put in jail. Multiple areas in your district are from that. So you know firsthand, and you could explain a little bit of this better than me, about some of the assemblymen and state senators that have been actually put into jail for so much corruption, and how they've actually hurt their minority constituents.
Well, I've been talking about the macro plan, the national issues, and the Trump presidency. Locally, we are being buried with this progressive philosophy, beginning with our city council, who likes to meddle in foreign affairs every now and then, you may have noticed. And this progressive agenda is damaging our education system, our local businesses, and it's being aided and abetted by our governor. The city council and Mayor de Blasio are on the wrong path, and it appears that the governor thinks this is the wave of the short-term power in the Democratic Party, and he's jumping on that parade as well. We're kicking back, and that are saying, whoa, this is a bad direction and one we're going to have to stop locally. In Queens, we have 18 assembly districts, and we're only running in 9 of them or 8 of them right now. We have 7 state Senate seats, and we're running against 6 of them. Well, we found candidates who are qualified in terms of ability and principle, that they understand what the values of this country are and the benefits of free enterprise and individual liberty. They're not going to be intimidated by this political correctness and mob rule. So we have some not only great candidates, we have a couple of really good, more than a few good shots, and we're going to build a party up with that and attract more candidates in the future. And we have.
So you would agree that when Trump says, what do you got to lose but to the African-American and Hispanic communities, you see where his platform is, and you can actually share with my audience firsthand experience that there will be changes in a Trump administration.
Oh, I know that, and I think one of my biggest frustrations is the African-American community to convince them that they should be looking at the Republican Party. And as Mr. Trump said, well, you've been going this way for 40 or 50 years. How is it working? It's not. Either on a local basis, whether they're talking about the road repair and transportation, the education system, it's the short end of the stick every time. In Queens,
wow,
we have the largest population of middle-class African-Americans in the world. Did you hear me? The world. These are homeowners. These are working people. They have their IRAs, their savings accounts, their own homes, and they are not getting served by any means by the Democratic Party. And it's very difficult for us to penetrate years of loyalty and despite the betrayal of the Democratic Party. And
this is not just in Queens. This is just an example. You happen to have said you're the largest in the world, but this happens all over the country. So this is not unique. And I think that Trump should be commended because he's the first one who's really come out and tried to say something and say, you know, come and join us in that kind of a way. If nothing else, you have to give him credit for making that effort.
Yes, and it's not falling on deaf ears. It's not as large a group as I'd like to see by any means, but, you know, the first steps are being made. And we have been doing outreach. We have a couple of really good candidates in African American communities, you know, we have a good start, and we're going to stay at it because we're right. And this is going to take some time, I guess, to get people to realize that.
And where do you plan on being Tuesday night?
I'm going to be at headquarters. I'm going to get a Skype thing set up if anyone's interested. And we have Queens Public TV. We'll do that and a few other things. And some of our underfunded candidates will be using the headquarters in Glendale as a home ground. So I hope we're going to have a pretty good night. I would encourage the Democrats not to light those fireworks up in the Hudson River too early. And I think there'll be some celebrations that night. Well, let's see who's going to be partying.
Do you see changes? Do you hear changes from your people, Clinton, with everything that's been going on the past week especially? Are you finding a change in discussion and wave and excitement?
The excitement that I felt and this rumbling from the ground, I felt before these FBI things. This has been going on for the past a little more than 2 weeks, and it's growing. And this, these new revelations from WikiLeaks and the FBI has helped fan the flames, but we've been moving in this direction. I think some of the recent polls in almost every state are very positive. You know,
I've been hearing a lot of that also. And I just, you said something that was very interesting, because I happen to know very well Michael Riley, and he's running for Congress against one of the most corrupt congressmen that is sitting today, and that's Gregory Meeks. And he said he has a group, Democrats for, you know, O'Reilly, because, and a lot of them are minorities, because they are seeing that nothing is getting done, and they're not being listened to their issues, they're being ignored, they're being taken for granted. And so you are right. You are, as a leader and within your lead guidance, getting a lot of these kind of initiatives started and spreading. So I congratulate you for that. Any final words before we go on to my next guest? That you would like to, you know, mention to my audience, share, and...
Well, I have my ear to the ground, we are battling the Democratic National Committee. We are battling a liberal mindset that has overwhelmed the Democratic Party. They've taken it over. They're in a league with a large part of that same mindset, that same agenda with the press and the media. We have academia and Hollywood, all that. I think the people aren't buying it. The American citizen is not buying it, and we're going to see something phenomenal on Tuesday.
Well,
so,
I hope you are right. I really hope you are right. People, this is really the most unique politician, because anybody who knows Bob Turner will tell you he is probably the kindest, most honest gentleman you will ever, ever meet. And you will never have any kind of scandals on this man that's been going on and that has been going on. He is just such a decent, kind, soft-spoken man, as you've just gotten a bit of it tonight. And I am so honored to have him on here, to call him my friend, and to celebrate with him. Well,
okay.
He's a lot
Maybe.
More.
God bless you. Take care.
Thank you so much.
Good night.
See you on Tuesday at Victory Parties.
So, you're still using the hotel website with the gentleman that played Captain Kirk and Denny Crane, or the goon with the beard and the strange uniform, or the talking lawn gnome to book hotels, car rentals, bed and breakfasts, or cruises. Are you kidding me? Let me let you in on something. You're not really saving money with those. Those are the new retail. Why pay retail when you can book your travel accommodations and pay wholesale? In fact, up to 75% off of standard pricing. Snazzy Traveler is the travel equivalent of the big box wholesale members clubs. But you don't have to go and look for a parking space and wait in line to check out. You can save hundreds, even thousands of dollars on travel. And best of all, it's like having the services of concierge for just 27 cents a day. I'm serious. Snazzy Traveler has all the hotels and B&Bs you're looking for, and more besides. They have all the top car rental companies and cruise ships and tours. But if you want to save big money and get great service, there's only one way you can get the deals I'm talking about. Go to our website, MadisonCPC.com, MadisonCPC.com, scroll to the bottom of the page, and click on the Snazzy Traveler banner ad and get signed up. You'll soon discover why Inc. 500 rates Snazzy Traveler America's fastest growing travel website. Be smart. Be snazzy. Don't pay retail. Snazzy Traveler.
Welcome back. I'm Cindy Gross, and this is Cindy's Corner. Before I introduce my next guest, I have to remind you that next week we are going to have Steve Lonergan with me on the show, giving a brief summary of what is happening, the results of the election, and the next steps forward as we make the transitions in January and as we look to 2018 and 2020. And also, it is I'm very humbled and honored, the Consulate General from Israel to the United Nations, Dani Dayon, has honored me with joining us on the show, and he's going to tell us firsthand what's going on at the United Nations, not just with Israel's relationship with America, but all the interactions that are going on. And it's really, truly a pleasure. It's one of the first rare interviews, and we were very lucky to get him. That's next week, right here on Cindy's Corner's radio show. Next, Kendall Casey Unruh. Kendall, are you there?
I am here, Cindy. How are you?
Good. Thanks for holding and joining us. I really did not give you an introduction because you're going to get a really different introduction than anybody else I've ever introduced on the show.
I believe that. And I sit there and I listen to you, Cindy, and you are such an amazing woman. And even when I first met you, I hope you realize how unique you are. And I think that any candidate would be so fortunate to have you pulling in your corner for them, because that is definitely an added bonus. And just your rubber stamp of approval truly brings some credibility to a candidate. And I wanted to let you know that.
Well, thank you. I just had to share with the audience. I'm going to let Kendall tell you her background, her mini bio, and everything you want to know, because really we have the most requests tonight to how to listen to this and follow up when they heard you were on. You have your club and then some listening. But I met Kendall in quite a unique way. And I've shared this story a couple of times, but for those who haven't heard it, it's really important to realize as you go to vote and as you're listening to the press, how twisted media facts are. What even seems to be the most truthful facts are anything but. I met Kendall in July in Cleveland at the convention, and I was so interested in trying to hook up with her because I knew that she was into Ted Cruz and everything and that she's doing with Unbound the Delegates, and I was there because at that time, and I still am and I always will be a Ted Cruz supporter, but, I mean, she was like God to everybody for trying so hard to make something happen at the convention that would have a long-lasting impact. And everybody kept talking, especially in the New York delegation and through the media, and even in Cleveland I did a lot of interviews, and everybody was telling me, Ted Cruz is working behind the scenes with Kendall Unruh to try to destroy the entire convention. So I met Kendall at a breakfast, and I said to her, I guess I'll see you later at the private Ted Cruz party. She said to me, I don't know what you're talking about. I said, Kendall, you have to know. Aren't you working with Ted Cruz? She said, I never met the man. I did this as a movement because it's something I believe in. And I said, Kendall, it worked out. I have an extra ticket. And she said, really? I would love to come. Maybe I'll even meet Ted Cruz. So she said to me, I would love to come with you. And I got her the ticket, and she said, can I bring my daughter? She hasn't been doing too much at the convention, and she's going to tell you more about that herself. And I said, it happens I have two tickets. And I was so honored that I was able to actually introduce Ted Cruz to Kendall. And it was such a meaningful moment of thanking and working together and feeling. And by far, that party, of all the parties I went to, was the most heartfelt, tears rolling down, supportive, trusting, loving group of people there from all over the country, yes, even from New York, because there were other New Yorkers there besides me. And with that, I just want to tell you, don't listen to everything or believe everything you see in the media, even if it says it's a conservative blog or a Republican-oriented paper, check out your facts. Follow your resources. And with that, I'm going to let Kendall introduce herself.
Well, I do want to concur that that was an amazing event. And it truly was one of the highlights of the convention. And getting to meet Ted Cruz and just have that couple minutes to where he thanked me for what I had done. And no, it was not a conspiracy to where we were working together privately, secretly, in order to create the avenue. Had he jumped in, if the avenue had been created in order to have a different nominee, by all means, he would have had a built-in fan club and a whole group of delegates that would have gladly been out and immediately been just ecstatic that he had jumped in. But obviously, you know the story, that it was never about a candidate specifically. But and I do want the listening audience to know that you were very diligent as a hostess asking for my bio, and it was me that failed to get it to you, so I will verbally give my bio. I have been a long-term Republican activist for actually going on 30 years, and I actually had gotten involved in politics because I just had a drive in order to have, in effect, cultural change, and I have always worked for conservative candidates to get them elected. The convention, the national convention cycle, is something that has always intrigued me because I'm a very policy-oriented person. And once I understood the jobs of the national delegates, and that was to nominate the president, but beyond that, to actually write the rules for the RNC conventions, and also to develop the platform, which of course is the vision of the party, and defines what we believe as a party, then that intrigued me, and I have actually been, since 1988, have been elected a national delegate to, so now the last 8 conventions. I've served on the platform committee, I've served on the credentialing committee, and of course most recently I served on the rules committee, and it is just something that I have always kept my focus on, and one of the things that I have done every national convention cycle is I have run slates of delegates in order to go to the national convention, because you and I agree on something, Cindy, and that is we are rock-solid conservatives, we are constitutionalists, and that has always been my focus. The people, the national delegate candidates that have always wanted to run from Colorado, because we live in a caucus state, have always had to be vetted by a handful of people that run conservative-based groups here in the state of Colorado, and we put some hoops out there, and they have to jump through all of them and actually sign pledges that they are going to adhere to constitutional conservative principles, or they're not going to get put on our slates. So that mechanism was already in place, and we have been actively, very successfully getting slates of delegates elected prior to this election cycle. So when Ted Cruz, of course, was competing here in Colorado in a caucus state, we already had the knowledge, we already had the list, we already had the team players that have been doing this literally cohesively as a team since 1994. So it was just nice to be able to have a candidate to solidify behind. And that is why Cruz did so phenomenally well in Colorado. And one of the false narratives, unfortunately, that Donald Trump wove when he was first running against Ted Cruz was that Ted Cruz was stealing the election here in Colorado, and that there was a lot of hokey pokey going on, and that he had paid us money and given us trips. Well, believe me, it cost several thousand dollars out of pocket to go to the national convention. There was nothing that was reimbursed to us. But what Ted Cruz knew was he knew what people to ask to help him to go through the caucus process. Now, Donald Trump could certainly argue it's complicated, because it is. I understand that. But he had some really smart, good players on the ground here, Donald Trump did, that actually knew how to work the system. But unfortunately, just a lot of things fell through the cracks, and they were not effective. So Cruz actually went to the convention with all of the delegates from Colorado in tow. So, and then, of course, by the time the convention rolled around, Cruz had actually already suspended his campaign, and therein was when the dynamics changed. And it, for me, it shifted from being candidate-specific and supporting and working for and being ecstatic about having a really strong constitutionalist that was going to represent us and be our next presidential nominee, and it shifted into, once again, where my heart is focused, and that is the policy and the rules.
Okay. Now, you were working, because I remember through other people in New York and the tri-state area, there were conference calls and there were different groups, super PACs, joining with you before we went in July.
Let me explain kind of how this worked. When I first was interested then, because I got elected to rules, and it was actually Ted Cruz that wanted me on rules. I had wanted to serve on the platform committee because, as I said, I like the policy aspect, and I love being on platform, and I love debating, and I love, it's like being in the legislature, and you have committees, and you serve on the committees, and you actually draft amendments, and then you meet together as the body of a whole, and you argue for your amendments, and then that is how the platform is developed. So I love the process. I love the research that goes into developing the amendments, and obviously they did a tremendous job of getting an extraordinarily conservative platform out of this convention, because quite honestly, Trump was very focused on the Rules Committee. So the platform was put on the back burner, and I had several different platform committee members actually tell me that it was a diversion for the rules, so it actually worked out for the platform very well. So anyway, I had actually, once again, was thinking, well, what can I do on rules? Because Ted Cruz had asked me, and I really didn't want to be on rules, but because I wanted to honor him, then I thought, well, I'll go ahead and I'll do it, and I'll figure out if there's some type of change I can make within the rules themselves. So I started doing some research. My fellow Rules Committee member, Guy Short, he was the gentleman from Colorado. Each state gets two Rules Committee members, a male and a female. And we started talking about a conscience clause. And that completely piqued my interest because I'm a very conscience-oriented person. I understand that our conscience, our right to conscience, is the most precious real estate that we own. It's the most precious gift that God has given us. It is something that we should never violate. It is what is at the bedrock core basis of decisions that we make. And it's why we have America. It's why it was founded. It is something that is a core systemic understanding and belief within Americans in general. You can't force people to violate their conscience, their right to conscience. And whether it's religious or whether it's secular, whether, you know, it doesn't matter. If a person holds something that is so dear to them, that is what motivates and makes their decisions, is the moral compass for their decision making, that should not be violated by government. And it certainly shouldn't even be violated in the form of the sanctity of a vote. So I was intrigued once I read Curly Hoglund's book, the Delegates Unbound book, because he made an extremely well-articulated case that the right to conscience existed within the party, and the delegates had that right to exercise their right to conscience, which means that they were not bound to a specific candidate. Well, once I realized this concept, then I thought, I'm going to sponsor a conscience clause on the Rules Committee because I want to codify this right that already exists, that delegates actually have ownership of. They just don't realize they have this ability to unbind. So I went ahead and I started getting a little bit of media, and the Wall Street Journal picked up a feed, and they called me, and I did that interview. And the next day, I had hundreds of private messages and Facebook inquiries and emails, and I don't even know how people got my phone number, but suddenly I even had requests from media from all over the world. That's the power of the Wall Street Journal. It's a credible newspaper, and it was a credible story because I wasn't some fly-by-night person, that this was my first rodeo, that I was just a delegate that was trying to make something up on the fly as I went along. My long history with the party, my long history with being a national delegate and having served on committees brought the credibility to what I was doing. So I immediately knew I was going to need some help. That's when I had called a friend of mine, and we teamed up, and she's a good organizer, and she started pulling things together. Now, her and Bo, who was actually the, well, he wasn't the money behind the case that got decided prior to the convention about the delegates unbinding in Virginia, but he was the plaintiff in that case. They actually ended up starting their own PAC, and that still exists, the Free the Delegates PAC. That is separate from the Free the Delegates movement, because the Free the Delegates movement is what we took into Cleveland, which was having the conference calls that did the activities on the floor. The Free the Delegates PAC was monetized, and they have their own agenda. Even now, they have their own agenda, and at the convention, they were trying to change like the threshold for the vice chair votes on the floor of the convention, something I had zero to do with because I was just so focused on the Conscience Clause, I didn't have time to take on another project to try and get that passed. I didn't have that much political capital. I will tell you my one regret is not sponsoring a rule to make him, to make Trump reveal his tax records. I wish I had done that. I think it would have taken away a lot of the ammunition that's being used against him. But at the time, I didn't have a lot of support. So,
okay,
now
I
do want to
question. Oh.
Sure.
I know that Mike Lee was working on the Rules Committee in July with you a lot. Were you working with him a lot beforehand or just in July? And
no. In fact, I had not contacted him, and Ken Cuccinelli, the former Attorney General of Virginia, had a group of very fervent Cruz supporters, very fervent, on fire for Cruz delegates that were on the Rules Committee. We formed our own coalition, and we put together a package of about 40 to 45 rules that we all sponsored as a coalition. We were having conference calls for actually several weeks going into the convention. And we were coming up with ideas. We were doing the drafts. We were voting on what we wanted to have sponsored into the rules. It was very, it was just very involved. Mike Lee was on those calls because he was part of the coalition that had been pulled together. Every single conference call we had, it was verified that the Conscience Clause was not going to be discussed as part of this package because there were many within this coalition that were not supportive of the Conscience Clause, including many famous long-term Rules Committee members like Morton Blackwell, and there were others that were. So rather than get into it and get into something that was divisive, then they just didn't talk about it. And one time Mike Lee did come on, and he said, is this anything to do with the Conscience Clause? And immediately Ken Cuccinelli said, absolutely not. And he says, great, we can continue to converse then. I was talking to people that knew Senator Lee, and I said, can you get him to endorse the Conscience Clause? And at that time, he would not. It was not until the Rules Committee was going to convene on Thursday that Wednesday night I spoke to him and found out that he was absolutely unequivocally 100% on board. So then I knew that I had that secret weapon because he carries a lot of weight. But those who saw the proceedings on the Rules Committee saw that immediately they called the question. As soon as I moved my amendment, the next person who stood up, the opposition, called the question. It was over. So Mike Lee didn't even have a chance to give his very impassioned appeal and therefore his endorsement for the Conscience Clause. So that's part of what comes with having the power. obviously the RNC, Ryan Priebus, was working in tandem with Donald Trump, and they wanted to slam this down because it was a threat to Donald Trump. It was a very cohesive, very well-organized attempt to keep him from getting the nomination. And had they counted our votes on the floor when we had requested and submitted the petitions for the roll call vote, when the very first day the convention convened and the very first order of business was happening, and that is the reading of the rules and the acceptance of rules package that we had passed, had they counted those votes, right now we probably have a different outcome. Now, I do want to be honest that I am not a Trump supporter even to this day. However, it looks like he might be our president, and I can tell you right now, I will unequivocally do whatever I can to make sure that the promises that he made going into this election cycle that he will be held to, because that's what we all have to then work together as Republicans, is to hold him accountable. And I think the Never Trumpers, more so than anyone, have the advantage of really, truly holding him accountable, because I want him to follow through on what he has said he is going to do. I want him to be the person that he has promised that he is. So it's not like I'm going to be saying, I'm going to be trying to undermine what he's doing or trying to say, I told you so. I want him to succeed. And I certainly do not want Hillary Clinton to win. It's just that in Colorado, we have a little different scenario than you do on the East Coast, because we actually have the potential of casting votes because of our unique scenario of having Gary Johnson being a very viable third-party candidate, only because we have so many pot smokers here in Colorado. We have a very limited mind.
What about Evan McMullen?
Well, Evan McMullen is not on the radar as much as Gary Johnson is here in Colorado, just because we tend to be extremely libertarian-oriented. I'm not going to be voting for Gary Johnson. I'm going to be voting for Darrell Castle, most likely, and he's on the Constitution Party. Anything that we basically do at this point, is going to be a protest vote. The good news about a third-party candidate here in Colorado, and this is very interesting, if you remove the third party, Hillary jumps up about 8 points ahead of Donald Trump. When you add the third-party candidates, Donald Trump flips, and he's ahead of Hillary. So the third-party candidates are technically siphoning off more Bernie voters that can't vote for Hillary than siphoning off Trump voters. So it's advantageous for Trump to have the third-party candidates doing so well in Colorado. Now, they're not going to win, and we are a winner-take-all state with the Electoral College votes. But, obviously, they're flipping it for Donald Trump, ironically.
Okay, now, we are short on time, but I do have two big questions for you.
Sure.
All right, you did tell people the message of you will support, and I gather you want people, as Ted Cruz has said, the alternative of Hillary and the senators that are involved with Hillary and the Congress people that are involved with Hillary are certainly much worse than anything that could possibly happen with having a Senate run by Republicans, a House run by Republicans, and Donald Trump being held accountable, like you said, and of course, even more than the Democrats, the Never Trump people are going to be on top of watching everything. And
right.
He put out a couple of really good policy plans. I mean, he put out today his two advisors on Israel. It was the strongest, most pro-Israel American platform that we've ever had from either party. And
mm-hmm.
It's now in writing and with leadership there that really knows what they're talking about. So you're right, he will be held accountable, and people are going to watch this. But I know we had to discuss something that we agreed on, which might have changed over the past couple of weeks, and maybe it's a discussion when I could have you back on for a longer period about changing the rules for 2020 and 2024, because so many people are so frustrated with what's going on in both parties in regards to their rules committees. I know the Democrats felt it at theirs. All these debates, the number of candidates, the money that is spent, the longevity of all these primaries. I know Sheryl Crow has started, I believe, a write-in protest to shorten the time of primaries. So I'm sure you have some feelings on this.
Well, sure, and the blowback that we've had in the state of Colorado because we did away with the non-binding straw poll is there is now an open primary on our ballot that got there through ballot initiative because they collected the signatures because of the bad blood and the bad feelings from this last election cycle. And unfortunately, who knows if it's going to pass? It's very well advertised, and there's a lot of misunderstanding about people who don't understand that open primaries are a bad thing. But going forward to the election cycle with the RNC, it all depends. If Trump wins and the down ballot races win, and I'm glad that he has backed off from telling his supporters not to vote down ballot because he's not going to get anything done if those down ballot races don't win. So I'm glad to hear that he's backed off on that. But Reince Priebus, if he chooses to run for re-election, is going to have easy sailing if he is successful in what he's done, because basically he's going to be vindicated and say that he needed to slap us down at the convention and everything worked out great. So that's going to remain to be seen. If obviously everything is completely a blowout, that's going to flip things, and that's going to start to create some discontent within the RNC. But remember, the RNC that was elected and was serving at the last convention and within those committees prior to the convention were very favorable to Reince. And they were extraordinary. Now, I did have some Rules Committee members come up to me after the Rules Committee itself had adjourned. Actually, I had three different pairs of two, male and female, come up and say, we really wanted to support the Conscience Clause. However, we just couldn't because we didn't want to go against Reince. So therein is the very adamant allegiance factor that the RNC has for their chair. Now, what will change things is if Carly Fiorina continues to walk down that road of potentially running, because I know Bob Graham from Arizona is going to run. He would be a disaster for the grassroots. He would be actually even worse for the grassroots activists than Reince was. So it's going to remain to be seen who actually steps up and actually runs for that position. But with the rumors going around that Carly was in the running for that, that would be a great step towards, once again, taking that focus, getting it back under the grassroots, being able to pass those 45 rules that we sponsored as that coalition that were all grassroots oriented. The entire package was taking the power away from the Rules Committee and giving it to the delegates, the grassroots delegates, because they've got the power right now locked down. In fact, one of the rules that they made sure they passed again was Rule 12, to where any decision they make in between conventions, the RNC can do, even if the delegates voted for it at the convention, they can undo it in between convention cycles. That is outrageous. That is putting all of the power that should be in the hands of those delegates that are dutifully elected by their representation back in their home states and their congressional districts, and they're taking all of that power and they're putting it into the hands of the RNC. And that was a huge gimme to the RNC. That was outrageous. So the other thing that they refused to do is close down those open primaries. Those open primaries are a disaster. You should not be having Democrats and independents crossing over and selecting the Republican nominee, and by all means, you should not have Republicans crossing over and being able to pick the Democratic nominee. So
I totally agree with you. And I also happen to, you know, now after what's happened with both Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Donna Brazile, Reince Priebus looks like, you know, the most innocent, pure, you know, all-American
boy. I know.
He has not been brought up in any of these scandals. I mean, even all the bad jokes you see on Facebook, like, oh, Fox News that. I mean, so he's where, you know, 2 months ago everybody was sort of against him. Now, because of what's been piling on, the ideas that we've discussed previously, and I know other committee people have, suddenly have to take a back seat to see where we're going to be and what's going to happen in January.
Right. Yeah, Reince is not scandal-ridden in that way, and we're very fortunate that way. And look, we all know that Republicans normally don't tend to have all the scandals that Democrats have hanging around their necks. What the problem with Reince is lack of leadership and the inability to truly let go of the power and let the grassroots delegates do their jobs. And it wasn't just even about the conscience clause. There were so many worthwhile changes we were trying to sponsor. For instance, there's so many of the votes are tied up in just a handful of people at the RNC, and we were trying to lower that threshold to where more people could get involved in the decision making. We were trying to do away with the paid lobbyists that influence so much of the decision making on the RNC that are voting members, but they obviously have interests that are paying them to be there. Very just common sense reforms that the power structure protected the power structure. And that's the problem. And it's different than what we're seeing with the Democrats. And it really, truly, if you compare them, most people would say, well, what's the big deal? But truly, if you're wanting to have the convention operate with the voice of the delegates who are elected to be there and not have it be a top-down approach, but have it be a bottom-up approach, Reince needs to go. And like I said, we need to have a very competitive challenger. But, that's just part of the political process. I mean, we do that all the time. If we get candidates in that are not effectively representing what we feel is truly the vision of the party, which the Republican Party really does focus on the grassroots up versus a top-down approach, as it should, but when it gets top-heavy and bloated like that, then we need to clean house and we need to get some different leaders in there. And I will tell you what it will do is it will set the ground game better, laying the foundation for a Cruz 2020 run if Donald Trump is to lose. So, like I said, this all remains to be seen after November 8th.
Well, I'm going to have to close shortly, but I just final words from you about your thoughts, any last-minute words, just a sentence or two to summarize everything to your followers.
To summarize everything about my thoughts? Well,
no, about any closing statement you would like to make in a minute or less.
Oh, okay. Well, I appreciate you having me on just to be able to kind of regale the listeners with the past stories. And I would love to hear Steve Wann again on next week because I actually got to meet him when I came out to New York. But basically what I'm encouraging people to do that are struggling with the fact that we have a binary choice and they're just not comfortable voting for either candidate, this is a time when you can vote your conscience. And because that's actually going back to a very deeply held belief system, that is actually the most important thing that a voter can do with the sanctity of their vote. And that includes voting for Donald Trump, if that is what people are feeling to do. And I have friends that are mostly voting for Donald Trump, but I also have many other friends that simply this time, for whatever reason, simply couldn't. And they're in the same camp that I am, saying we do not want Hillary to win. However, we're going to exercise our right to conscience and cast some ballots for some other candidates. We have 23 candidates on our Colorado ballot. 23.
Wow.
It's just crazy here in Colorado. So,
among other things that you have on your ballot that we don't have. Kendall, as always, it's a pleasure to have you. I will have you on again when all this calms down. And, of course, listen in, call in next week. Steve, I'm sure, would love to speak with you. He's a great guy. He's one of my mentors and friends and confidants.
He's a hero. He's a hero in the movement.
Yes, he is. And he is totally for Donald Trump. He is supporting him. I was actually with Steve on again. We were sitting and having dinner, and everybody was calling us that Brett Baer was on with Donald Trump, and he called Steve nasty, and that he knows him for 25 years, and Steve Weiss was calling him crying, "Why is he calling you nasty?" He said, "I met him once in 25 years. What are you worried about?" But he is behind him totally. He has been discussing this all over the network interviews he's been doing. But back to you, Kendall, you are an inspiration. You're an amazing mother. We didn't even get into your daughter's stories, but we've really gone over. And I promise my listeners we will have Kendall back, and we're going to share a lot more. And again, Kendall, thank you. Listeners, remember, we are going to have on next week Steve Wanigan and Danny Dayone from the United Nations. Remember, the first annual Cindy's Corner Book Club event, December 7th. Follow me on Facebook, Cindy Gross, on Instagram, Cindy's Corner Radio Show. You can purchase my book, Rubber Room Romance, through MadisonCPC.com and Open Rebellion Radio. And if you want to be one of the first 100 listeners to join our Girls Night Out, our Authors Night with best-selling authors, please private message me so we can get you in. From my corner to your corner, good night.